Hello and welcome
to the Indie Film Review.
This is a podcast. You are listening to a podcast.
This is not your mother.
This is not your mother.
You don't listen to your mother.
You never listen to us. Do the laundry. Why don't you do the laundry? Hey, guys. It's getting a little weird. That's okay.
We like to get weird here right off the bat. We like to send that baseball flying down the end zone. I think that's
inland zone. Yeah, we know about sports. We absolutely know about sports. Inland Empire is my favorite turn of phrase in the basing ball. Hey guys, run home, Jack. I mean, that's a thing, right?
Right. Run home, Jack.
Yeah, I know baseball. So, the main purpose of this show is to call your mom. I mean, what are you guys doing? Have you called your mom in a while?
The main purpose of this show is to...
Not me, but for you to call your mother because
review indie films.
Oh, I mean, we're going to review an independent film. That's Dan. I'm Jared, by the way.
Hi.
We're so happy you turned this on and have gotten through this section of the podcast. I swear we will review independent films. We will
check one for review.
Yes.
Check two for
check
more
two
of this.
Check two for call your mother. It's the checklist of your life. Dan,
yes.
Please tell us the name of this film that we reviewed. And what it is about.
We were requested by Mr. Mark Lewis to review his film Enthusiastic Sinners on Vimeo. You can find it on iTunes as well.
Okay.
So definitely go check his stuff out. I looked for this on IMDb, and unfortunately I couldn't find anything for it because I was really curious about the budget of the film, and I was curious about what camera he used because it was a really nice camera.
Well, I have info on that.
Oh, please.
So, I saw a little short YouTube video of this guy interviewing Mark Lewis at a red carpet event where it was premiering at a festival.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he did this for 10 grand.
Wow.
And he was like, I'm just some dude who works in a wire factory. And
wow.
He's like, I wanted to make a film. And he made one. And I'm like, holy shit. you made a pretty good film for just a dude who's like, I'm gonna just make a film.
So a fucking shoestring budget,
yeah,
and amazing camera quality. Just it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. So basically, Enthusiastic Sinners, written and directed by Mark Lewis, and the film is about it's another one of those films where there's a widowed woman or just. There's a person who's in an unhappy relationship and a person who's not in a relationship, and they come together and they kind of, they kind of fuck a lot, and they hit it off, and they start to question, you know, their current relationship status or their current, you know, where they are in their lives, basically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What was the name of that other film that was similar that we watched?
Bored in the USA.
So, Enthusiastic Sinners is the Gaspar Noé version
of
Bored in the USA.
Yeah, for sure. However, we're going to keep this clean because it's a family show.
Yeah, family show.
So he finger bangs it, right?
Yes. Fornication, if you will.
Okay, so... One thing I want to get off right off the bat. Okay, there is a lot of fucking in this movie, but this movie, I don't know if Mark Lewis has seen this film that I'm about to mention, but there's a Japanese movie from the 1970s called In the Realm of the Senses, and it is basically a fucking intense pornography.
Really?
And it's a feature-length art film. But that one is about a guy who like hires a prostitute to work for him, and then he ends up having an affair with her, and then she gets obsessed with him, and like they just fuck the entire movie, and then she cuts off his fucking penis and balls.
Whoa.
It's based on a true story that happened in Japan in the 1930s.
Holy shit.
It's fucking rad. But
that makes me think of a film I really like called Blind Beast.
Yes.
Which I think you've seen
Blind
as well.
Blind Beast is fucking amazing.
Where that dude, he like kidnaps a woman and he's obsessed with the human form. And
yeah.
He's blind and he has all these sculptures of like women and people like all in this room.
Women's body parts.
Yes, yeah,
like,
women's body
then
parts.
They'll have walls of like eyeballs and butts and boobs.
It's a wild time.
Yeah.
Anyway, so crazy. Enthusiastic Sinners, just the formatting of it reminded me a lot of In the Realm of the Senses, which gave me really cool vibes, I guess. I mean, it's In the Realm of the Senses is a really hard watch if you're not ready to watch hardcore pornography. I think In the Realm of the Senses is the only film, or it's definitely the first film that has an on-screen fellatio and erect penis.
This one gets so close to that.
Yeah.
It gets so incredibly close to just having the erect penis, because you see everything else.
Yes. I want to see the penis, and we do see the penis. Like, at first the penis teases us, and then...
Direct quote from Dan. I want to see the penis.
At first, the penis teases us, and then you're like, oh, there it is, in all its glory. But she's pretty nice, too.
we should There's the also names, a woman
we
there.
We should get
Anyways.
The names of the actors.
They are Christopher Hurd and Maggie Alexander.
Yes, they do an excellent job in this movie. But before we get any further into what we think and what we don't think, let's ask each other some questions about this film.
Sure. Let's do that.
Jared, were you put off by the amount of sex in this film?
Yes. even after you warned me that there was going to be sex in this movie, I watched the entire first sex scene from start to finish.
It's
and I did
long.
Not skip it.
It's
and
long.
And I am proud of myself that I did not turn it off. And, it was very difficult for me. And then I skimmed through to see when the next sex scenes were. There's about four.
Yeah, there's like
about four or five.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I made sure to watch at least a little bit of each of those scenes.
Just in case they have pillow talk dialogue that might be...
I watched like the beginnings and then I cut to the middle of the sexings and then I cut to the end. There was actually one where... like the power goes out and it was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like the ending of like the third sex scene, but it's a sex scene between these two characters just over and over and over. And I understand what's supposed to be happening is they're starting off as they're just like wildly animalistically having sex and doing the cheating. And you know, they're just two people who found each other and they're using each other. And then they end up falling in love through the course of the day of spending time together. And then like the last scene of them having sex is more of like two lovers and like people, it becomes very intimate and less primal, if you will. And I understand that.
So you're saying,
but I also don't want
to
watch.
We have to appreciate this film in terms of there's three characters. There's not only the man and the woman, but there's the sex. The sex becomes a character, and the sex itself has a character arc. It goes from primal to refined.
That is 100% true. I know Dan's smiling right now, but that is a great point. And another great point was that man's penis.
He's going to listen to this and be like, God damn it.
These children.
I'm sorry. Jared, do you have a question for me?
How did you feel about the camera work in this movie?
So from the very get-go, just a combination between the camera work and the mise-en-scene. Just it's beautiful. Like, it immediately got me in because it was just B-roll of this weird town that I know nothing about, but I'm like, it looks so fucking awesome to look at. I was more so enthralled by the camera work than I was their relationship, I think. And that's what really got me through a lot of the sex scenes, because I'm a pervert and I watch them all the way through. I don't think I should classify myself as a pervert. I think I should classify myself as, I don't know, I just feel weird about fast forwarding through scenes.
Like, no, I know. You're more of a purist in that way.
But...
And I respect that.
I'm not really a huge fan of sex scenes at all, but yeah. I still got through it. And I will say that even though I found them to be a little bit much, they did help the narrative of the movie progress. Like, they were important to each tentpole of the climaxes, essentially.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I get the whole thing of, like, they're new lovers, so they are, it's enthusiastic, you know? And it's, they're gonna be fucking a lot. That just happens in the first stages of a new relationship. You're just fucking all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And because this is a film, and they need to establish them falling in love quickly, they're just like, they're just gonna be going crazy. They're, like, in this house. It's almost like the house is a fantasy for them that they want to live in.
Yeah.
Where one... The I think they even state that plainly in the movie, is the woman is a widow and she's having a fantasy of having a husband and living the life she used to live. And the other one is the man is having a fantasy of being like a single guy or like not being married and tied down with two kids and being like in his younger days, I think. And it's interesting that dynamic of them being in this cabin together and that relationship that they form. But also there's a lot of fucking.
You just make me hesitate before I even ask my next question. So you asked me about the camera work and I kind of mentioned the mise-en-scene. What did you think about the location shooting? Because that, like I said, the locations were what was enthralling about this film.
Okay.
Me. How about you?
If I haven't made this clear, the camera work, the editing, everything about this movie is really well done.
Oh, okay.
I liked the setting and this little cabin and, like, them together. All of that was really great. I love the close-ups of them when they're talking, and it's kind of, like, not completely focused on them. Or sometimes the actors will, like, come into where the camera is. I thought all of that was done so well. I liked a lot of the camera
work. I like that one scene where they have a close-up of the penetration and they're having a full-blown conversation. And it's really hard to concentrate. I'm just kidding. They don't do that. Sorry, Mark.
there are moments where it gets so graphic to where the dude is completely naked. Both of these actors are completely naked.
For a good like third of the movie.
Yes, and you see everything. You see her vagina. You see buttholes. You see all that stuff, and it's like. In other movies, when they do, like, Hollywood movie sex, you know, it's like two people are kissing, and then, oh, no, the cover goes over. Like, this is not Hollywood movie sex. This is very close to pornography. I mean...
Yeah, but it's not, though. Like, that's... I'm gonna defend this movie because...
I'm not saying that in a bad way. I'm just saying...
Well, I just...
It's highly erotic.
Okay, yeah. So it is highly erotic. Pornography is... It has such a negative connotation, though, whenever we bring it into the realm of what we call cinema and what is art
you
cinema,
are correct.
Things like that. So I don't want to demonize it in any way because it was... It really is a beautiful movie. So let's go ahead and move into...
Oh, yeah. We'll get into how we feel about it. I just want to make one point.
Okay.
So I'll say... I believe it was Gaspar Noé's Love, right?
Yes.
That movie, I really didn't like how they tried to use sex to tell a story,
mm-hmm.
right? In this film, Enthusiastic Sinners, I actually really do appreciate the way they are trying to tell a story through sex.
So there's something to take away.
In terms of that, he
Mr.
definitely
Lewis.
Does a better job at it.
You'd made a better movie than a famous film director.
Yeah, than the famous auteur, Gaspar Noé. More like Gaspar Noé, thank you. All right. I'm 100% sure I've said that before, but I don't care.
It's a good joke. We can't let it go away. All right. Let's get into the spoilers here just for a second.
Oh, so before we get into spoilers, how did you feel about the movie? I guess I kind of already said.
I loved it. Like, I was impressed without words. The film took me on a wild and erotic ride that I was not expecting to have. I will say that. And because I was not expecting to have it. It pleasantly surprised me through and through. Like, I was engaged in all the dialogue. I was engaged in the chemistry between the characters was actually very good. I will say, though, that the start of this relationship seemed like it happened a little too fast.
Yeah, I'll agree. The intro of them getting into it is probably the weakest part of the film for me. When she is like rambling on and on, and the cop just seems like he wants to leave, but he can't leave because this lady is still talking. And then they immediately cut to them having sex. I was like, that was a little weird. But then after that, the movie kind of smooths out.
Yeah.
The dialogue is much better.
So let's talk about some scenes that we liked. One thing that was kind of an issue with how abrupt the beginning was is the fact that I was half expecting it to be a dream. Like, one of them is imagining it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I meant? So,
yeah. Well, that the whole thing they're doing is a fantasy. To both of them.
Right. Well, they're indulging in a fantasy, but I thought, like, one of them was imagining it.
Ah, yeah. That would have been a much creepier tone if one of the characters was just fantasizing about that the whole time.
Yeah.
Probably the guy. I mean, let's be honest.
I mean, yeah, let's be honest.
It's going to be the guy doing that.
But so this woman, just to give you an idea of her desperation, if you haven't seen the film yet, she has a line of dialogue that says, "Half the time I think I never want to see a penis again. The other half I want to hump a doorknob." And that made me laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And then whenever she's starting to feel him up and, you know, get into the naughty, she's like, "Oh, you feel good, you smell good, you taste good." And I'm like, holy shit, is she going to name everything that he's good at? I'm like, you do your taxes. You wash the car every week. It's been a while since I've had a man to mow my lawn, if you know what I mean.
Oh.
And then...
Wait, what do you mean? Dan, what do you mean by that?
Well, see, you sometimes you grow hair down there.
What?
And mowing the lawn is a metaphor for trimming of one's pubic hair.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay. So they're like little first date thing. So they have their sexies and they're like, okay, now what do we do? And then they're like, let's go for a hike. Because like literally what else do they do? And I think it's so weird that the cop wants to stay.
Yeah, right.
Because this is such a bizarre, spontaneous thing that has happened. And he's like, no, I just want to like stay in your house for the whole day. And I mean, it turns out really good, but I'm just trying to put myself in the situation of like, they're still complete strangers. You know, that's right. That's the thing. And them falling in love and doing this, they're taking such a huge gamble. I think that's part of the romanticizing of this story. And I also thought it was interesting that their ancillary characters, like her son and his wife, they are not really characters in the film.
Right.
They are unimportant. And I thought that was a very interesting thing in the film to do.
Well,
it's like a conscious choice of like, it is only between these two characters and that is it.
Right. And I think that's what I liked more about this film than Born in the USA, to make the comparison, because Born in the USA, we have the ancillary characters and it's weird. And in this one, it's so focused on this fantasy that both of them are like just living vicariously through one another.
And you also, they're both very good actors.
Yeah, they're both very good actors, but it's almost as if this fantasy transcends what is expected, if that makes sense. It feels like they are so enthralled with not just each other, but the idea of each other. It's like they're fetishizing they're fetishizing each other's entity. Not necessarily, I want to have sex with you. It's like, I want to have sex with you because you are something new.
You are the other, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You're different. No, that makes total sense. And Some of the conversations they have are very, like, you know, first datey, like, hey, what do you do? What do you do? And they're kind of talking about stuff like that. And throughout the conversations, I understood it was them trying to get to know each other. But then in the back of my head, I started wondering, like, is there something more that's going on?
Like what?
Is there another layer? Is there another thing that is going to be happening? And that does happen at the very end of the film. There's some crazy shit that the male lead says.
Mm-hmm.
But up until that, it's kind of just them flirting and chatting, and they're getting to know each other, and but then they sex, and then they sex.
I feel like the sex combined with the flirty, the flirtatious first date talk, that is what builds the chemistry so well. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like, it wasn't like the first date talk was annoying to sit through. It wasn't a pain, because they were, mm-hmm. they were talking like about Van Halen at one point. She's a cute person. Like she's spontaneous. She's bubbly. She plays with his gun. Did I say spontaneous?
Yes, you did.
She's spontaneous. She's bubbly. She plays with his gun, and she also takes out his service weapon.
Yeah,
and
he
she
does.
Also takes out his Glock. And she also
she gets handcuffed to a chair at one point.
She does.
They're joking around that he lost the key.
Yeah.
That was pretty good. And then she's like, oh, I've just realized that I've been handcuffed to a chair with a complete stranger who has a gun. And you're like, yeah. Yeah. A lot of the dialogue in this movie is pretty great.
Oh, yeah. Like, I've written some down.
Here's some conversations that really spoke to me. Because these are things that I literally thought the film was talking directly at me. And he's like, Jared, these are the thoughts you have a lot of. So we've made a movie about it. Are you okay with this? Okay. They talk about the male etiquette in the restroom,
mm-hmm.
right? So when you go into a restroom and there's stalls, the urinals. And if there's three urinals and there's a man, if he's in the far right, you don't go to the middle urinal, right? You go to the far left urinal. And I feel like this is such a weird unspoken rule between men of, like, you have to space each other out. But if all the urinals are full, it's okay for you to go to, like, that urinal there. Or he was talking about, like, when you're at a ball game and everyone just pisses in a trough. So it's so weird how we're so uppity about the urinal placement and, like, where you need to be. But in certain situations, that just goes right out the window. It's almost like during wartime, it is appropriate to piss on your neighbor to encourage him for morale purposes. And I'm like, you're 100% right. That's totally true. Also, they talk about the word midget, which I thought was very fascinating. This is something I thought about a lot. And I even thought about, like, the differences between the different words and why they little people find them to be offensive. So, okay. Dan, we're going to play a tiny game. Oh, phrasing.
I was going to say.
I didn't mean it like that, but I already said it. So, anyways, I meant the game is not going to be that long. Jesus Christ. Oh, okay. So, oh, boy. Oh, is it hot in here? It's getting really hot in here. I don't know what's going on. I'm getting tunnel vision. Is this normal? Is this normal to not be able to see?
Holy shit.
Okay, Dan, I'm going to say different words to you, and I want you to just say good or bad.
Okay.
Okay. Dwarf.
Bad.
Okay. Little person.
Good.
Midget.
Good.
Okay, so dwarf is actually a good term.
I know, but ever since we watched The Sinful Dwarf, they are all bad.
According to the Little People of America, midget is a very derogatory, bad word, and you should not use midget to refer to
Well, now I feel like an asshole.
Yes, you should. Well, I didn't know this either, because I thought midget was a good word. It's not. It's not. Little person is also okay. It's a little kind of like on the preference
Because Because little
of
people,
the dwarf, I guess.
Yeah, little person seems condescending almost. Like, yes, dwarfism it does.
It's the medical term.
Yeah,
dwarfism is what it's actually called. Yeah. But dwarf makes me think of fantasy stuff, and they bring that up in the film where it's like, little person seems condescending. Yes, dwarf makes you think of fantasy things. But midget is like a stronger, better word, but it is not, they don't like it at all. So you should not use it. And I thought that was so fascinating to me.
Right.
It's very interesting. And okay, so then I was like, I want to go deeper. I want to learn, why is midget a bad word? Okay, here's Merriam-Webster's dictionary. So dwarf is a person of unusually small stature. That is the first definition. Then you go to midget. The first definition of midget is something, such as an animal, much smaller than usual. So, whoa. I almost maybe think that when you're calling someone a midget, you're calling them like a creature or an animal.
Yeah.
So, understanding that, I now get why they'd like to be referred to as dwarf. Still think it's weird. I don't know why, but I think about this way too much, and I'm glad I finally researched it and figured
Thanks
it out.
Thanks to enthusiastic centers, you have a good handle on dwarfism and how you need to circumvent any kind of ill will towards them if you accidentally find yourself in a position of mislabeling them.
So don't say the N-word.
Here are
okay?
a couple
bad.
Things that I like about the film. The woman lead, she says at one point, there's a poetry to any job if you look for it.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting.
Which was a really cool line. Then the guy goes on this really poignant, upsetting, verbose telling
of
his
life. Oh,
this is
the scene.
Yeah.
This is the scene, dude. And tell us about it.
Well, what is, I forgot, what is exactly he's talking about? Because he's talking about how he has bad luck and he feels like he's on this never-ending roller coaster of it. Right?
Well, he is talking to the female lead back and forth about their lives, you know. And she goes, oh, you have a daughter. Let's talk about that. And he goes, yeah, I have two daughters. Or I have a daughter and a son. And she's like, well, tell me about them. And he's like, I don't really want to talk about it. And then she kind of gets offended.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes,
like,
no, you misunderstand.
Your balls in my mouth.
Yeah. He's like, we've become intimate with the genitals. Why is this something to be embarrassed about? And he's not embarrassed. He almost doesn't care about his kids, which was very fascinating.
Yeah.
And felt very personal to the point of, it made me think of the creator of this, and I'm wondering, is this too personal, is what I'm thinking.
I'm
like, holy shit. I mean, that might not be the case, but this was just such a powerful, raw emotion. And I was like, man. And they just snuck this in at the end. I'm like, holy shit. Okay, so he basically says that when his wife shows him pictures or video of their kids when he's out on patrol, he fakes being excited and happy about it because in actuality, he does not care at all. And that he finds raising kids to be awful and strenuous and it's very difficult. And so like that part of it, you can relate to where it's like, it's really hard to raise kids, but he also gets no enjoyment out of the kids themselves. It's making it sound like he does not love his kids.
Right.
Which is such a strong thing to have in this film that it, I don't know if I wouldn't say left turn or a hard, you know, hard left or whatever, but the way the female lead takes it, she's like, hey, it's okay. We all kind of feel different things, you know, like we all kind of feel that way sometimes, but he's like, no, I feel that way all the time. Like, I do not like my kids. Is that what you got from that scene?
Yeah, I did.
I want to make sure I'm not,
I mean,
misinterpreting it.
That's what I got out of it after a first viewing. But I would err more on the side of he's coasting and he's confused and angry with himself with that fact. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because I watched that scene twice because I'm like, I need to understand what is going on. And It felt like he got married and had kids because he thought that would make him happy. Or that would, like, right. That's, like, the thing he's supposed to do. And then he realized, oh, this is not making me happy.
He realizes that this dream is just full of fucking hot air.
Uh-huh.
So it's just him, like I said, it's him coasting through life, realizing very slowly and painfully that what he has laid out for himself, he doesn't want to sleep in the bed he's made.
Yeah.
Because the bed he's made was based off of this empty husk of what needs to happen, or what society tells you needs to happen.
But here's the weird thing. So if he goes with this other woman, she also has a kid.
Correct.
And then he's falling in love with her, so wouldn't that eventually lead to something?
It will eventually lead to something, but then again, like, he's falling in love with her, but whenever you fall in love with somebody in a day's time, you don't have enough, in my opinion, I don't think you have enough...
You're not thinking it through.
Yeah, you're not thinking it through, definitely. You're thinking with your genitals, you're not winking. With your brain.
Thinking with your winking. That's a phrase, right? People say that. No, but I 100% agree.
Okay, so I want to segue into, imagine this movie. I was thinking about it, because we've had two submissions of a film that's kind of like this. So just two people kind of hitting it off in an affair, and then...
Yeah, affair,
so,
yeah.
All right, ready?
Sure.
There needs to be a film about a real affair.
Okay.
Like a documentary film about a real affair that the spouses find out about the affair during the film and the aftermath that ensues with that. That would be such an uncomfortable movie to watch. But like the whole goal is we're going to... It would be such a shitty film to make too, because like...
Well, that's... Well, it would that's the ruin thing about this movie.
A complete relationship just to get a weird movie.
Now, it sounds like that Cheaters show. Now we're just doing Cheaters.
The production, imagine it produced like a movie, and the people who are the victims of the affair don't know, but they are told by the film crew, and then the world spirals out of control from that.
Or they find out by just watching it. They watch parts of it.
And then the film crew sends them video. Yeah, so the family's in the test screening. And we have plenty of sex scenes just like in this movie.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. On that point, I thought it was interesting that, like I said, that how they don't focus on the other characters in their lives. Because there could have been so much drama of the wife finding out that her husband is cheating on her and like what that entails. But that's not... The movie does not care about any of that. That is not the focus. It's all about the fantasy of these two people together in this cabin for a day. And I don't know. I thought it was actually kind of interesting. That they went that way with this is a pure
fantasy.
Well,
and then what to wrap it up, I think the ending of this film is phenomenal. Like, the ending blew my mind. I was not expecting it.
I thought it was really good.
It's so powerful because you have the guy's monologue that we just talked about just kind of still in your mind. And then there's a point in the movie where the woman says, you know, after these 24 hours, we're just going to go back to our humdrum lives and it's going to be over. And they're like, what do we do if we see each other? They have that moment. Mm-hmm. So they both kind of go their separate ways. And she calls her friend and says she'd pick up her son and have dinner with them. And he drives off away, presumably going home. And both of them are crying. And there's this really amazing scene of the woman on the phone kind of listening to who, like vacantly listening to who she's talking to on the phone, and she's looking out the window and you can see a tear going down her eye, and it's lit beautifully. Oh my god, I wanted to take a screen capture of it. It was so beautiful. And
it
then
was good.
You have the guy crying on his way home, and the guy
like
pulls over. Yeah, I know, right? The guy pulls over and then he like is frustrated with himself because he wants to continue that relationship with the woman, but he knows he can't, and he like hits his car and the movie's over.
Yeah There is one little line where they're thinking about continuing their relationship, and she says, let's take a leap of faith that we're both good people.
But are they?
And I love that line because you don't know. That's why it's a leap of faith.
They're both
really don't know each other.
Yeah, but they're both having an affair.
Mm-hmm.
So and your whole relationship would be founded upon like a huge lie anyway.
Yeah. Like it takes around like 6 months or so for the infatuation period to go away, and you're kind of like, do I still want to be with this person or not, you know? So they have a long road ahead of them if they actually want to pursue that. And I just thought it was such a great line.
Well, I think the film, like, it just the way in which the ending is cut, it's perfect. Like, it actually cuts to black, which is it's great.
Oh, yeah. So Mark Lewis, I think you did an excellent job. I'd love to see more films by you, preferably with less sex.
but we can't destroy your art.
Yeah, this is your art. This is what you wanted to make. And I think what you made, what you set to achieve, you've done very well. I almost have no issues with the creation and filming of this movie. It's which just is some of the content I'm
honestly
debating.
Saying a shitload.
Yeah, it's saying a lot for how low budget this was. This is like one of his first films, I believe. So, fantastic. I can see why it got into festivals.
I was referring to the fact that you actually like a film that's saying a lot.
Ah, shit. Okay, so we've talked for long enough. My God.
I'm going to have to cut frenzy
Facebook,
on this.
Yeah, I know. We got a Facebook. It's Indie Film Review on Facebook. If you want to hit us up on Twitter, it's at Indie Film Pod. Gmail, it's theindiefilmreview@gmail.com.
Instagram, at Indie Film Review Pod.
Yes. Podbean is indiefilmreview.podbean.com. That is where we are hosted. It is our go-to website besides necropodicon.com. If you'd like to go to necropodicon.com, you can find us and a bunch of other really good podcasts that we're affiliated with. A lot of D&D podcasts, movie podcasts, comedy podcasts. There's stuff for kids. We're getting new and better, like good ones, like all the time. It's pretty great. I love how we're growing and we're showing. You know? So, boy. So, thank you for listening. I really appreciate it. If you like this show, tell other people. Please tell other people to watch it. Just tell people, like, on the street, randomly. Tell a local police officer or a widowed lady who's your next-door neighbor. Tell her about it. Hey, maybe something will happen.
Tell somebody post-coitus. I want to know how that goes.
Yeah. Yeah, like, immediately after sex. You'd be like, Indie Film Review is pretty good. Have you heard of that show? She's like, what? Yeah, it's more than just independent films. That's a good slogan. Anywho, Dan, you have the final word.
I don't think I need one this week. That was good.
The podcast you just listened to is part of the Necropodicon Podcast Network. To learn more about this and other great shows, visit necropodicon.com. Okay, the advertisement is over now. I can have a cigarette and go to sleep or something. What do you mean this is still recording?